Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Oddcast the Podcast, or A World Empowered Dialogues. Here at A World Empowered, we have a philanthropic vision. We have a vision of the world where all women, men, and children are empowered. Empowered to speak their truth, empowered to be themselves, empowered to provide for their needs, and protect and heal the environment. Every week we bring in inspiring guests and thought leaders, founders of nonprofits around the globe, to share a message of hope and to inoculate people with the belief that they can make a difference. To share their stories of struggle and trauma and where they've come from and what they've decided to create and contribute to the world. We're adults here having adult conversations, so often there's adult language involved, but we want to thank you for being a part of this and for sharing the message and for tuning in. So get ready for another inspiring conversation with another thought leader and get ready to get odd. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is BC here tuning in with another episode of Oddcast the Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. I get to sit with my friend Nikki Dishnow.
No, it's okay.
I just asked you. I was going to say it right. You confirmed that I was going to say it right, and then I said it wrong. Thank you for joining me today. I'm so excited to be here with you and for the conversation that we're going to share. As a real estate agent, my real estate agent changed my life. My real estate agent literally changed the world. In 2008, I was 6 months behind on my mortgage. I was getting foreclosure notices. I was freaking out. I called him in a panic. I was like, you need to help me sell my place before it gets taken from me. I was going to do a short sale or whatever. He spent 2.5 hours talking me out of giving him a commission, changing my mindset around the asset, the value, the potential that I have with this place, and taught me how to reframe how I looked at my property. He taught me to look at it as a performing asset rather than a liability. And because of the income that I'm able to derive from my properties, I'm able to allocate all of my time to running my nonprofit and doing podcasts like this. And I'm really excited about the opportunity that we get to kind of have that same conversation with a lot of other people and kind of shift their mindset around what actually the opportunities that are actually presented through real estate ownership. So thank you so much for joining me, Nikki. I'm really excited for this. Please tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
I have been in real estate for 10 years and I started in Alaska. Sold about 30 homes my first year and a half in Alaska. Then got a divorce. I have two little girls that are 7 and 9, almost 8 and 10 now. Moved to Colorado, been here for almost 8 years and have a team, a couple people and assistant and a transaction coordinator. And I just really love real estate. I love helping people and really helping them in the sense of how they can make it an investment instead of just making it about buying and selling.
Is 30 homes in your first year normal? Because that seems really,
I was on an amazing,
like an overachiever, really amazing start to a real estate career.
Yeah. So when I started, the first day on job, found out I was pregnant. My first day.
You're like, okay, I guess I got to work.
Yeah. And the guy that hired me in Alaska, I was on a team and he was just like, we're going to lose you like after this kid is born and all this stuff. And I was like, no, I'll show you. And so I knocked on doors and made my calls and did everything that he told me to do. And just when I was having the baby, he walked in and I was writing an offer. He was like, you got to stop working. But I was proving him wrong that I was there. So.
Well, I hear that kids can be highly motivational.
They are.
You know, it's like that when you don't have a choice, the Cortez rule of management, when you burn the ships or whatever, when you have that motivation driving you, it's no longer just about yourself. You have something bigger than you that you're striving for, that you're working for, that you're moving towards. And kids can be really powerful for that. Plus, it sounds like you're the type of person's like, I'm just going to show you.
Yeah. And we're still really good friends. His daughter actually lives here now from Alaska.
Oh, really?
And, He still is one of my best mentors.
So how long were you in Alaska?
I lived there for 14 years and I worked at a title company for, I don't even know how long. And then was in real estate there for 2.5 years.
Okay. I wish that we had the time to share with the audience, because you and I've sat outside of this a couple times and I know a little bit more about your story than the listeners do. I wish we had more time to talk about what life was like in Alaska. When did you move to Colorado?
8 years ago.
Okay. And were you a real estate agent that entire time? So you were a real estate agent in Alaska and moved here.
And then still through the divorce. So it's kind of a hobby fun thing to do in Alaska. And
30 homes a year is a hobby.
Nice. It was just because it was fun. Mm-hmm. And we had a gravel pit and we had some other things going on up there. So it was just kind of like, hey, I really enjoy helping people. My dad was a builder in Pagosa Springs. And so I just always enjoyed real estate, working at a title company. So I understood the whole concept of real estate. But then when I moved here as a single mom, it became a job. And now it's finally going back to, I'm just having fun and enjoying it and really loving just being able to help people through their investments and one of the most important things that they'll purchase in their life.
It's definitely the most important thing. It's the most powerful asset that I'm not a financial advisor, disclaimer. This is not advice on real estate or investing or where to put your money. But in my opinion and what it's done in my life, real estate is the most powerful investment that I think a person could possibly get into, especially when you start looking at it from, when you shift the paradigm from this is a home and this is where I live and I want to be in a good school district and blah, 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 to how do I utilize this asset to create the lifestyle that I want? And we're going to get into that. I'm curious what the dynamic change was like moving from Alaska to here. Was the market fairly similar there, or, you know, what were some of the differences that you noticed moving from 14 years in Alaska to Colorado?
Well, it was a total different. My family was here, so that's why I moved here. Me and my sister started doing real estate together, which was great, was awesome. But learning, I was on a team that had everything going, had been in business for 25 years, just this is where you go, everything was set up. So coming here to a different market, learning the area, I kind of had known the area, but also just learning, relearning how to run my team.
Right.
And how I was going to do things, which a lot of it was copying what he had done already.
So the business principles transferred. Were there differences in mindsets in the population? Like, were there dynamics that were different from the people that lived in Alaska to the people that live in Colorado?
Yeah. So Alaska, everyone helps everyone. When it's negative 60, negative 40, someone's on the side of the road. If you don't pull over,
somebody
might die.
Right.
And so, no matter who you are, you care for your neighbor. So up there was just definitely more of a loving atmosphere of helping each other. We had community gardens and I mean, I just met people from being, here was definitely more of challenge of getting to know people. Everybody was more of hustle bustle. Going. And so not long after moving here, I got my Wyoming license for more of the slow down. But in Alaska, we call down here the lower 48. So like in the lower 48, it's more business. And in Alaska, it's just more communal. It's more communal.
What was the hardest part of life when you first moved down here, you know, as a single mom, trying to raise a family, trying to basically start over rebuilding your business, you know, were some of the biggest challenges that you faced early on moving to Colorado?
Confidence in finding clients and showing that my knowledge of what I had here. So I started meeting with other real estate agents, lenders. And I had an amazing lender that really just took me under her wing and showed me the ins and out of Colorado and introduced me a lot of people, and it was amazing. So,
well, welcome. I'm glad that you moved here. I'm glad that we're in the same networking group and that we're friends now. I really enjoy watching people's trajectory and watching their stories unfold. You know, I refer to life as like a jigsaw puzzle. My analogy or metaphor for life is, you know, you dump out the jigsaw puzzle and your first process is to flip over pieces. And then your next step is to try to figure out where those pieces fit in your life. And then as those pieces start fitting together, you get a bigger and bigger picture of what that looks like. So when you're working with your clients, first of all, who is your favorite client to work with?
I like both buyers and sellers. Okay. I love new homeowners. The
first time
buyer. The reason is just because they're so excited. The passion and getting them a place and getting them a home warranty, just helping them set up and then talking to them about, this is not a forever home. This is a 2 to 5 year home, you know, and how we can rent this out later on and start saving for that, the money for the next down payment. And so I think just starting off with a new homeowner, first time homeowner, and setting them up for a future is probably my most exciting, or going to a listing appointment and saying, you're not going to sell this home. Not that you're not going to, but these are your choices.
Not that this home isn't sellable, but this would be myopic and short-sighted to try to sell this asset right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And talking them out of it like my real estate agent did back in 2008.
Yeah.
I remember buying my house and just the energy that vibrated through me. It was just full of potential and possibility. And it was so neat to realize that, you know, I wasn't pissing away $1,800 to $2,000 a month in rent, that I was actually putting that into my own bank account, basically. You know, when I understood that, you know, okay, I'm paying $2,000 a month, but basically $200 to $300 of that is going into my bank account, because, you know, $1,700 of that is going to the interest and the other $300 is going to the principal. That's basically like money in the bank. And that doesn't include inflation and what's it called when the property elevates?
The value.
Yeah. Appreciation.
Appreciation.
You know, there was such a really neat and empowering experience that I listened to a lot of, especially Gen Z and millennial people talk, and you get a sense of discouragement. They don't feel that there's as much potential and possibility for them. A lot of millennials don't feel like they'll ever even be able to own a home. And it's understandable. You look at what the market's doing right now, you look at what interest rates are, you look at how property values are just skyrocketing, and there's always this bidding war. Even when things were nuts, it seems like there's still people trying to outbid people. So getting that sense of, I can do it. How do you encourage people that are just starting out and they're like in a 2-bedroom apartment or renting from somebody else that this is still a possibility for them?
So I have a story on that. I have a girl in Wyoming. She's 22.
Nice.
She bought last year for her 21st birthday, and she's been a year now, and we've got her into home. And she called me and she's like, I know you said 2 to 5 years, but I'm ready to buy again. And so we're getting the property management team over there to manage her home. And she's actually going from a 4-bedroom, because she got some roommates to help cover her mortgage. And she's getting a family in there and buying a 2-bedroom apartment kind of thing for her, because she travels a lot. But to see the excitement of, I never thought I could do this, and then here we are on the second, looking to buy her second place at 22 years old. The fear at the beginning was crazy.
Just a year later.
A year later. And now she's like, let's go again.
Can we do this again?
But I think just getting past that fear factor, and actually people are scared to talk to lenders. People are scared to get to know their knowledge or have people look at their finances. And I think these lenders – look at finances, they do applications all the time. And so looking at your numbers are nothing new to them. They've been doing it for 20 something years. So they're not going to judge you. Oh, you're okay. They're not going to judge you or do anything. So I think just sitting down and meeting with a lender, meeting with a financial advisor, and just see what you can and just start. Even if it is at in that 260 range, you know, just get into something and then start, be able to start building your investments.
Are condos and townhomes a viable option for somebody that's just starting? Because I know like 15, 20 years ago, that was a really good way to kind of get your foot in the water and get things going and things like that. What's the market like in the townhome and condo area?
So it's really a great option depending on the HOA, if there's an HOA. Because right now you can get approved, but then the HOA brings the pricing up, your monthly payment up, things like that. But right now you have a lot of seller credits that can pay for the HOA in advance, put credit towards things. But at the same time, you can look at a townhome or a house without an HOA. So it really depends on location. And that's where meeting and really getting those numbers on what you want to pay for. Not, you can get approved for $400,000, but you might not want your payment to be that high.
Right.
So really what your payment, what you're comfortable with, because you also don't want to go house broke.
Yeah, that's a big thing. People are like, well, I'm qualified for a $2,000, $2,500 a month payment.
Yeah.
But if you're only earning that much, they don't figure, okay, I got to factor in insurance and car insurance and property tax. And by the end of it, when you pile it all together at the end, that's where people get into the, at the, there's more month at the end of the money than money at the end of the month type of thing.
And I just think budgeting is huge.
Right.
So I really sit down like with first time home buyers for sure. And like have them write down a budget and say, what is your monthly payment that you are comfortable with? Because it really doesn't matter what you get pre-qualified. It's still about what are they comfortable with.
So do you tend to initiate the conversation of from the get-go, let's look at this as an investment and how this could eventually be a performing asset? Because I feel like the vast majority of the real estate agents that I've encountered are primarily just focused on getting a family into or a person into the home that they want. You know, they're like, how many bedrooms, how many square foot, what kind of yard and what kind of school district? And that's like the box that they're trying to put people in. It sounds like from the get-go that you try to plant that seed.
Yes. So I always say, let's get the home. Let's find what you want. And then also ask them, you know, would you be interested in investing? Well, a lot of people are like, we can't do that, that we don't have the money. And then when I show them that it won't cost you as much as you think it is,
right?
Then I say, let's get through this one. And then in 6 months, we're going to sit down and start planning the next 2 to 5 years. And that's where a financial advisor, just other people coming in so they can start saving money. And yeah, so I have another couple that were just doing that. They bought 2 years ago. They're renting that out and we're going on to their next house too. So I really love setting people up for success only if they want to.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I give them the options, but some people don't even think those options.
And it depends on what stage of life they're in. Like if you're dealing with, you know, a middle-aged couple, late 40s, early 50s, mid 60s or whatever, they might be in a different stage of life and they might not be wanting to get into real estate as an investment. And they want, I know a lot of people, they're like, I don't want to deal with renters, that I've heard too many awful experiences. And, you know, this whole renting to people thing scares the crap out of a lot of people. But somebody like the 21-year-old that you just started out with, he's just like, yeah, this can create the lifestyle that I want.
But I have a couple now, they're in their 60s. And they want to downsize. So selling their home, because it is a big for a rental, but selling the home and buying a duplex.
Right.
And so they have a rental on one side that's going to continue giving them that money. And then they have a place that they can Airbnb while they're out traveling. And they're like, we never would have thought of that ever.
Right.
And so it just showing them what they can do, and instead of just buying a little home that is going to be vacant for 6 months out of the year, how can we make this an income property.
Income producing asset.
Well, and then they're talking about renting to their grandkids.
Oh, really? Nice.
And so that way they know it'd be taken care of and everything too, because they're scared of the rental people.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real concern. I've been renting my properties for going on 13 years now as a landlord. Yeah. And I've had some really, really awful experiences. I had one tenant literally drove her car through the house, like collapsed the foundation. She told me that she was in the driveway and she thought the car was in reverse and she just put it in drive and drove. There's no way in a 3-foot gap that you had that kind of momentum. But, you know, even that ended up working out for me,
right?
Because the insurance from that helped pay to remodel the entire basement. Like, I did a lot of the work myself, but I remodeled the basement and I turned it into a duplex that both the upstairs and the downstairs could be rented out. So even that bummer experience that was kind of really challenging in the moment in that time ended up working out to my benefit.
Right.
And I tell people, like, I retired when I was 38, and I tell people, if I have to deal with a month or two of tenant stuff or putting a couple grand into fixing up my rental after somebody moves out, that's better than going to a 9-to-5 that I hate 40 hours a week, 50 weeks out of the year. If I have to put a couple weeks, a couple months out of the year into something, I've got passive income. And the exactly. Mindset shift between active income and passive income is really huge. And I don't think that we teach people enough of that.
No, we don't. And like, I have a mentor, he has hundreds of properties. And he was just saying, being scared as a single mom, like to buy my start over. We had 6 investment properties in Alaska. And starting over, what to do? What if the renter does this? Like, I don't have the money to fix this all up. And he's like, you don't have the money not to. Mm. Like, you have to make the jump and things are going to happen. Because he has hundreds of properties, there was a couple months ago, he lost $100,000 in a day.
Whoa.
But with all the income he having, he didn't lose anything. Like, he was saying, same with you. You know, he's 40 years old and he has hundreds of properties and he doesn't have a 9-to-5. He has to spend time with his kids and travel. But he had to work his butt off for 10 years and started just with one home, then 2, and then 3, and then all the stuff that can go in between with renters and things like that. But you can work a 9-to-5 job and not have the success in 10 years and still be in the same spot. Or you can make that jump and put in the hard work and then 10 years have money actually coming in, passive money coming in.
And actually have the financial freedom.
Yes.
You know, you might work until you're 65 and you might end up being able to retire and you might be able to enjoy the things that you've planned on, all the trips and experiences. You might end up infirmed or tired or not being able to retire and having to take on a second job working at Walmart when you're 65 because inflation and life is more expensive now than you thought. So why not put the time and the money and the energy into creating this opportunity now when it's at least, if you can't control the outcome, you can at least influence the outcome. It's more likely based on your effort. If you work for a 9-to-5 for somebody else, what else can you do? And when we're talking creating passive income, like, what are the opportunities for creating passive income? You can make a CD and hope that you're Taylor Swift and go on tour and have all these sales on iTunes and selling CDs and whatnot. You can write a book and hope that you're J.K. Rowling and that you get all this passive income and somebody turns it into a movie. You can do billboards, storage units are semi-passive. What other passive income opportunities are there that you can actually create a lifestyle and build the life of your dreams and create financial future and financial freedom, like real estate?
Well, and then other people that are scared of renters, it's like, if you just every 2 to 5 years, because it depends on the market, you sell that home, you put that equity in the next home, you sell that home, you put it in the next one, add the 6th one, then you don't have a mortgage payment. So there is always ways around how what you can do for you and what works for you in the real estate world.
So I want to touch on the property management aspect. I know that that's not your specialty, but you have experience and knowledge in it. Some of my worst experiences when I was first getting started as a landlord were going through property management companies. I'm actually going through one right now with my commercial building. I hired a company. They found a person. That person ended up, I don't want to get into it. Some of my worst experiences early on as a landlord were going through property management companies. So what recommendations do you have for somebody that's just getting into the real estate market and getting into the rental idea on whether they do the property management themselves or how do they find a good property manager?
Oh, yeah. So finding a good property manager is hard. I do have a couple that I work with that I know.
Want to give a shout out real quick?
Her name is Christy. But she has managed, like I have a friend that has 20 properties and she was scared because her last property manager was terrible. Mm-hmm. So she's like slowly, now she has 10 of them with her because she's actually taking care. Her tenants are being taken care of. She's being taken care of, but it is so hard to do that. If you can do it, I still would talk to an attorney about getting the right contract because tenants do have a lot of rights.
Sway, yes.
Right now.
And a lot more than the landlords do, especially in Colorado. I mean, it depends a lot on where you are in the country. Yeah. There are different landlord-tenant laws and rules depending on where you are. But
yeah. And like before, I had a tenant in Alaska and they knew the rules. And so they squatted for 6 months for free because in Alaska, you can't kick them out in the winter. Mm. So you to know the rules. That's why a property management company is good to have. But there is a lot to go through with finding the property manager that you can trust. Usually the bigger ones are just so busy. Mm-hmm. You kind of need to find that person that will take care of your properties as their own.
My recommendation is make sure that you vet your property management company, like interview them as much as they're interviewing you. Interview them as if you were interviewing and bringing a tenant into your property. Make sure that they vet their applicants like really, really deeply. One of the things that I learned early on is there's a huge difference between a person's credit score and their character.
Yes.
Some of my worst tenants had like 780 approaching 800 credit scores and they ended up being total POSs and treating my property like crap and treating me like crap. And, you know, so making sure that that property management has a system and vet them, ask them questions like, how do they make sure that they're finding you good tenants? What is your application process? Because there's a big difference between just pulling somebody's credit score and actually finding a good person.
Yeah, I manage my own for a while and my heart gets the best of me. Mm. So the sob stories, those kind of things, just, I want to help. So I needed a property manager to manage my properties and vetting. Mm-hmm. It was a full-time job, like hiring somebody to do this, but Christy has been amazing. And finding that person has taken so much off of my plate that has helped a ton. So
my recommendation is if you want to try, and if you're just starting off, if you want to be your own property manager, for me, my intuition is infallible. Mm-hmm. Like when I really pay attention and I shut off my mind and I shut off, like I'm not listening to the sob stories. I'm not listening to the please will you help me thing. When I listen to my intuition and get a sense of who they are and combine that with the previous landlord's recommendation, like those two things in conjunction, what the previous landlord says about them and what my intuition is telling me about the potential or the opportunity that's before me, my intuition is always right. It's me that chooses whether or not to listen to it. In every bad situation that I've ever been in, whether it's wrecking my motorcycle or having a crappy tenant, every single one of them, when I look back, I can say, I ignored my intuition. I had a feeling, I had a gut feeling, something on the back of my neck was telling me, don't go here, don't do this, don't rent to them. And I ignored it. So if you want to start, pay attention to your intuition and make sure that you get a good recommendation from a previous landlord. Those two things for me personally have made all the difference.
Well, and starting your books off right And like we have, I have programs that I had used for as a property manager that helps tremendously just where they can pay rent on time. You can get them what they paid, all everything that you need up front is really important too.
Yeah. And for me, I finally decided that I was going to have a firm line, not a line in the sand, that I was going to continuously move. And I was going to treat my properties like a business.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
My tenants know that rent is due by 12 o'clock on the first day. And a minute after that, it's late. The next day, I'm going to file a 5-day notice to quit. Plain and simple. I'm sorry. Like, whatever your story is, whatever you're going through, that's on you. You need to fix it. You know, my job is not to be your bank. My job is to be your landlord and your property manager. And the landlord takes care of the property. You take care of the rent. That's how it works.
Yeah.
So,
but it's not as scary as everybody. There's so much negativity that goes in saying that a property manager or a tenant or whatever, but like the guy that owns the hundreds of properties, he was like, it's every 50 that have a problem.
Mm. One out of 50
has the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the other 49 are fine.
Right.
So you just have to also really focus on the positive and like starting going. And even when you have a bad experience, just keep going and not get scared. And I think the older we get, we have more of that fear mindset. It's like, so starting off when you're young, you will thank yourself later on in life. Your older self will be thanking your younger self for buying property when they're young.
Again, to your point of paying attention to the positive side of things, what other opportunities, what other jobs or businesses provide this kind of opportunity? When you're going through a challenging situation, you have to remind yourself of that. When you're dealing with a crummy tenant or they're 6 months behind on rent and you're having to go to the court or whatever like that, right. Reminding yourself of, okay, in the long run, there's nothing that provides this kind of opportunity for me. I can't sing. I will never write a book. And the only opportunity for passive income is this. So this is worth it. It's all worth it.
Well, and then a couple that I help right now, they have 20 properties in Greeley. They're slowly selling those properties and buying more like duplexes, fourplexes in Texas. So it's like even what you buy at the beginning and you can sell them and get the equity and invest more. So I just think that's always moving and helping. And they just bought one a year. And now 20 years later, they have 20 properties. I just went to a listing appointment in Longmont. He bought it for $175,000 and it's worth $975,000.
What?
And he's been renting it for 15 years. And he's like, I think we're at the top of the market where I can sell this. And think what he can do. It got paid off the first 10 years. And so he's just been making money. And now look at what the equity he's gotten. So holding on to him longer. But he's like, I don't think it's going to go over $1 million. So like, let's go ahead.
I mean, it will if you want to give it another decade or 20 years. But, you know, what can you do? Like to your point, what can you do with that $900,000 now?
He's going to buy an apartment complex.
Hmm.
You know, he's putting that down for an apartment complex. So he sold one property and is getting 10.
So how does a person buy a property a year? What's that process like?
So your first home that you buy and live in is your first time, like a first time home buyer. So it's going to be your primary residence. So you're only going to have to put, you can put as little as nothing down to 3 to 5% down.
Okay.
And then you rent that one out while you're buying your next property, which is your primary residence. So you only have to put the 3 to 5% down again. So if you just keep doing that, everybody thinks you need 25%, 30% to put down as an investment property. But if you just live in it and then every year or every 2 years, you're moving up, you're making those rentals. Well, if you don't want to move, then you keep that house, you buy the next rental. And you would have to put the 20% down.
So I know this is probably a little bit more in Nate's wheelhouse. He's a mortgage broker a friend of ours. How does a person roll over their mortgage into another second property? Because I imagine after only a year, they haven't paid that mortgage off. So what's that look like when they're refinancing or getting a mortgage to buy the second house?
So they can just use that rental income that will be coming in as part of their income, which will help them qualify, or they can get a HELOC, which is a line of credit off of the home and getting it off the equity that's in the first house to buy the second house. And again, that's like elementary school, how I'm describing it, but a lender can describe it much better.
Okay. How much of your rental income applies as income? The last time I tried, and it was like probably 5 or 6 years ago, the last time that I tried to purchase another property, I was told that rental income didn't qualify. And
so it does qualify now. Okay. I don't know exactly how much of the rental income would do, but the last three people I've helped, that rental income.
That's nice to know.
Yeah, is part of your income.
Yeah, it was really interesting to me because I was told that they didn't at the time. Again, this was probably
COVID time.
I want to say it was like 6 or 7 years ago. So it was pre-COVID time.
Okay.
But they told me that rental income is too unstable and I had to have a W-2 and a verified job with, you know, this particular debt to income ratio.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, people have to have a place to live. How is rental income less stable than a job? Because I know lots of people that got fired from their jobs overnight. They thought that they had a $60,000, $70,000 a year job. And the next thing you know, they go in and they're putting their stuff in a box and they don't have a job or a check anymore. So to me, it always felt like rental income was more stable. It's good to know that, you know, they actually apply that now. And even if it's only 60% or whatever.
Had anybody that has only had rental income, they have their job. And then the reason they're not counting this house as debt for them to apply for the new home is because it has a renter in it. So it's actually more income.
Gotcha.
Instead of, hey, you owe $400,000 on this house. That's instead of your debt to income ratio, if that makes sense.
Are you allowed to use your current property as collateral to purchase a second property?
Yes.
Okay.
Essentially, that's what it is.
So you're putting your current home as basically in second position. They're using that as collateral.
And it just depends with lenders, and there's so many different lenders and what they can do and different scenarios that they can do for you.
Well, how do you recommend somebody find a good lender?
I mean, Nate.
Obviously.
And Nate, Kristen, and then I have some.
Nate works at Illuminate Home Loans.
Yeah.
We can put that in
Nate Washburn,
the description of our podcast. He's awesome.
Yeah. And but what does a person look for that can look at different banks also for you? So knowledge, time in the business. I hate saying that, but it's so true when they've seen it for 20 years on what's going on, or that they're working under a mentor that has worked in the industry, because every year things change. It changes so much that you want somebody that's knowledgeable and is up to date on all the new rules and what they can offer, because you might not even realize what you can qualify for in different programs. And there's like construction loans and just so many different things that you can qualify for.
So what if someone's moving to a place, they don't have a referral or recommendation of somebody to work with, like how do they begin that search? What questions do they ask and who do they look for if they're looking for a mortgage broker?
I have a whole checklist.
Contact Nikki.
Yes.
She'll help you find a good one.
My first thing is find a real estate agent. And then they usually have recommendations for lenders who they work with. I always give three recommendations so that they can see who they connect with.
Okay.
Because I think you always want to kind of get pre-qualified to see the best interest rates you can get, what programs that lender offers. I don't want to just say, hey, this is who you're using. So I just think even Googling, asking AI what questions to ask a lender, but ask the real estate agent, ask also what they're looking for.
And ask them why. You know, when they send a recommendation, hey, I think you should talk to so-and-so. ask him why. Like, why do you recommend Nate? Like, why do you recommend Nate? Oh, I know knowledge. Nate personally. He's freaking awesome. I know that he goes above and beyond, but that's because I know him.
Right.
So if I were new, I'd say, why do you recommend Nate?
I just think he's been in the business for 25 plus years. Mm-hmm. His knowledge, the programs, he's not knowledgeable just on one subject, not mm-hmm. just on mortgage. It's all the different programs that are out there that just blow my mind that you can do. Like the cash, mm-hmm. there's a program that if you're trying to sell a home and buy another home, they help you buy it with cash and then sell your home. There's reverse mortgage. There's just so many options, and he's so knowledgeable about all of them that I think that's why he's honest. He's blunt in the sense of if you're not going to be pre-qualified, he's not going to try to push you into something. He's going to try to help you mm-hmm. to see what your next steps are. You know, need to help you with the debt or paying off this, or don't pay off this. Don't pay off your car, continue making the payments. Like, just all of the knowledge, and that he's very helpful and has a great heart.
Yeah.
Also, I think is why I recommend him.
So shifting gears a little bit, you have a project that really excites the hell out of me. You're working on something that's near and dear to your heart as a single mom. And what real estate has done for your life. Please tell the audience, you know, what it is that you're creating and this vision that you have.
Which one? The bed and breakfast or the investment, low income?
The low income. Let's start with
that. So it's not really low income. It's affordable housing. Mm-hmm. That's what we've decided, because there is no financial background. Like, you don't have to, you just have to be pre-qualified. You can't make too much or anything. We are doing where it's buying fourplexes and turning them into condos and making them. This is Jeff Havens is who's doing this, and I am partnering with him as a real estate agent. So he has this vision of making affordable housing for people that cannot afford. That we have four that went under contract in 1 week at $260 for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. And all of them have been looking for 2 years or so for a home, and to be able to get them in their first home and start building their future. They cannot rent those out later on. We're making them be owner occupied and not for investors, but they can pull that equity out and buy another home.
So what's the vision and the mission of what you and Jeff are creating? Explain to the audience, like, what the grand vision and what the opportunity is that you're trying to create for people.
We just want to help people with affordable housing get into homes of people that cannot or haven't been able to, and not put so many restrictions mm-hmm. on that. And then every 6 months, 3 to 6 months after we get going, we've just almost done with our first one, just continue buying fourplexes and go more and more on that, but really helping people to find a home and not have to pay rent and just
home. Kickstarting their real estate careers, basically, their real estate opportunity.
Like, people wanting to put higher bids in, and we're like, no. Like, Jeff paid for inspections. He paid for the down payment, like a seller assistance. If he makes a certain amount, he's going to give back to the buyers, just really helping the buyers.
He paid for the improvements.
Yeah. Just making it an easy transition and not make too much money. Like, cause you're in that where you're low income or you make too much money. And there's those people that are stuck. And that's where I was. It's like, I couldn't do either.
If I make one more dollar, then I lose my benefits type of thing. Yeah.
And then you're making too much, or if you start making that, then you can't afford either. So it's just, anyways, we're just trying to help those people.
So how do you find the families that you're working with?
We just put them up with the other real estate agents.
Okay.
If the people in the unit want to buy,
okay.
We really, like, we have one in this unit that we're helping buy, and they've been there for 9 years.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it depends, putting it on the market and then having the people come in. But the only restriction that we have is it has to be owner occupied.
So what's the vision? So like the person that had been there for 9 years, they've been paying rent on this apartment in a quadplex for 9 years. What's the vision? Like, what's the next step?
So for her,
how does this change their life?
For her, I'm so excited because we're helping her budget. She'll be staying in this property for 2 years.
Okay.
And so building
set a
equity.
Plan.
Yeah.
Like, this is what it looks like. This mm-hmm. is what we're going to do. And this is what the next 2 years are going to look like.
Yeah. Okay. And so then in 2 years, we're planning on selling mm-hmm. that property and then having them buy their first home.
Rolling over that equity,
into a home. And she has six kids mm-hmm. living in a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. And so this is just like, she never in a million years thought they could buy.
She wouldn't have been able to.
No.
With six kids in a small apartment, she never would have been able to.
Right. So being able to help her enjoy something for 2 years that they're building equity in, and then being able to sell that and buy a home. I mean, she's just ecstatic.
And this isn't even like a rent to own thing where $100 a month of your rent is going towards the down payments in some nondescript timeline. Like a decade from now, you might have $5,000 to put down. Like this is a legit, you own this property. This is yours. You will sell this in 2 years and roll the income, the equity into an actual property.
This just fills my cup because that's why I want to do real estate. Mm-hmm. I want to help people get into a home and make it a home and not have to rent just to throw away money.
Yeah. And it's the whole teach a person to fish mentality.
Yes.
Like you are literally giving them a launch pad to create a new kind of lifestyle rather than creating a society that is dependent on provisions, dependent on handouts. Like most low income housing is you have to make below a certain level and then the city, the county or the state or whatever will subsidize the rest of the rent. And then you're stuck in that lot in life for the rest of your life. There's no way to get out of it. When you're on, what is it? Section 9 or whatever, like they pay for 75 to 100% of your rent. And if you start making more money, then you lose all of that. There's no way to get out from under the boot of that provision, that money that's just being gifted to you. But this is giving people an opportunity to become self-sufficient, to become empowered, to create an actual life. And I'm so excited for what you're doing. That's so fucking awesome.
Yeah. When I was in like 18 in Section 8 or whatever it is. They called me and told me I was making too much money and I needed to quit my job if I needed to stay there. So I worked harder, got out of there. But you have to stay here or you have to struggle out here. And it's hard when you have kids. I didn't have kids at the time. So I just worked my butt off and moved out. But
I don't think that most people have that mindset.
Right. They don't know.
When we look at the whole of society and the welfare state and all of the things that are given out, I don't think that most people have that mentality where, fine, I'm going to work double hard and get out from this. I think most people are like, I can't do this. I need this benefit. And I quit my job or whatever.
Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I was a single mom trying to get in there, it's like you're making a little too much money.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was like $250, too much money.
Cut off line. Yep.
And it's like, I need help. And so that is where my passion of doing this with no, and that's all Jeff. It was just awesome that we came together, that I wanted to do it and he wanted to. But there's no restrictions. There's no anything.
It's really neat. And I love that both you and he have the long-term vision and understanding. You know for a fact that person who'd been, that tenant who had been renting for 9 years, who now owns her own house, when she goes 2 years from now to buy her first home, her first whatever, who's she going to use?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is she going to go to Century 21 and just ask for a random agent, or is she going to work with you and Jeff? Obviously they're going to work with you and find the home of her dreams. Like having that long-term vision, that knowing if I do the right thing now, it's going to pay off later.
Yes.
And one of my favorite quotes of all time from Jim Rohn said, if you can have anything that you want, if you help enough people get what they want.
So true. My heart is I love watching other people grow. I love helping and seeing them succeed. Like that fills my cup.
We need to have more programs like this. The social welfare state is designed to keep people repressed, designed to keep people dependent on the handout. And we're not empowering people to create the lives that they want. If the incentive structure were reversed and people were incentivized and given more money for working harder, okay, you've made it to here. Now let's promote and motivate you to get to here. Like switch the motivational structure. We can change the whole of society.
Right.
What you and Jeff are creating can change the whole of society. If there were dozens of programs like this in every state in the country, helping people get out from under the boot of the social welfare program, it can literally change
that
lives.
Is what Jeff wants Haven Homes to be. Is he wants to do it across the country. Can I change?
Yeah, of course, obviously. Yeah.
So when me and Jeff met, I was telling him my vision. We were both actually volunteering at a school, at our kids' school. And I told him my vision of a single mom wanting to help other single moms, like with attorneys, with when you're food stamps, all of that, like when all of a sudden you're out on your own and you're just like, what do I do?
Now what?
Now I'm spending $5,000 to get an attorney and I have to go here. It's a full-time job just to get any kind of help. And like, I have kids and then I have to work. You're not thinking, let me go buy a house and invest and do all this. So my goal is to let the mom see what her dream is and then give it to her in a house. And Jeff is like, well, mine is to have affordable housing. And so I'm working on my project of having people, so if you know an attorney, financial advisor, anybody that is willing to talk to people that are going through, doesn't it just have to be single moms? It's just that's where my heart is because that's where I've been. But even married couples or single dads, whatever. But helping those people, I'm wanting to buy a bed and breakfast and let them stay somewhere for cheaper and then get on their feet and see what their dreams are, start letting her dream again. And then Jeff wants to apply with the affordable housing. So then we can put them in there and let them have a home of their own. And so just working on that, and we're only on our first project, but that is where he does want to go across the country.
Well, I know you've already changed the lives of at least one family, one single mom with six kids.
Yeah.
How many other, people were in that quadplex.
So there's a newly wed couple, a single guy, and then another couple.
Oh, so the fourth one actually.
All four of them are sold.
Nice.
So.
And that was in like a month?
Yeah, they all went under contract within a week. Yeah, so we're already, we should be able to close in the next couple months because of the process that has to happen. Two, we'll be able to probably close in a couple weeks, and then we'll start a new one.
How do you find the location or the buildings that you want to start with? Like the quadplex in Greeley that you guys began with, how do you find the ideal property?
We were just looking MLS. I was making calls, like finding places to see if they wanted to sell, what they would sell for. We just used the MLS and what hassled, like looking at past and what's coming up and word of mouth.
Okay. Was the Greeley one on the market at the time? Okay. So they were motivated to sell already. You didn't have to convince them.
No. And that's what was nice is because when you sell it like that, they've already given the tenants
notice
and what we can come in and say, well, do you want an option to buy this?
Okay. What does that conversation look like?
With the tenant?
Yeah. Do you want an option to buy? And what if one or two of the people in the quadplex were like, no, I like renting or I don't want to do that. Like,
well, two of them said they didn't.
Okay.
And so they are actually going and finding another rental. Okay. They were like, we have no interest in ever owning a home.
Okay.
And you can't push people.
You can lead a horse to water.
Yeah.
Can't shove its head under.
Yeah. So the other one moved out back with her parents.
Okay.
She was kind of staying there for almost free. Mm. And so she's just young, doesn't know what she wants to do, travel or whatever. So we just give them that option. And if they do want to, give them a certain amount of time to get pre-qualified, mm-hmm. help them the best that we can. And
I imagine it's a scary opportunity for them to begin with too, not knowing, you know, having been in that renter mindset for so long. If you're like, do you want to have the option to buy? I imagine it's like deer in the headlights. What do you mean? How is that even possible?
Right.
What's that like? And how do you convince them or show them that, you know, what this looks like and what they're going to do and how this is going to work in their benefit?
It is getting them out of their own way of mm-hmm. just talking to a lender. And I think like the lady we helped, she was just like, there's no way. And then she talked to a lender and they're like, oh yeah, you can qualify for the amount that it's being sold for. Mm. And she was just like, she didn't even understand how to comprehend that or what to do. She felt like it was a lot of work to be giving all the lender all of her information. But it's like,
what's the alternative?
What's the alternative? Like, you're not going to find a place that's renting this cheap or buy.
Or give you the opportunity to build equity for the next 2 years that you can roll over into a property that you will own.
So when we're talking to her, we really had to stay calm and like, hey, this is this first step. Let her process that. And then we went to the second step, let her process that, because it was just so overwhelming.
You're changing paradigms.
Yeah.
It's not that different from, I work a lot with suicidal ideation and addiction, and it's really not that different from changing a mindset, helping somebody reverse their paradigm. When somebody becomes stuck in the idea that this is who I am, yes. it's really hard to change that personal vision, changing that paradigm. And that's essentially what you're doing, is somebody has been in this is my lot in life. I will only ever rent. That's the best that I can ever hope for. I can never be a homeowner or a landlord. So far beyond their concept of reality, it's not impossible, but it's really hard to change that and kind of broaden their vision a little at a time of what the potential might be.
Yeah.
I bet it's neat to watch that unfurl.
Well, like this the single guy mm-hmm. that is buying it, he's just like, I never thought I could buy ever. And like no one in his family has bought and all this other stuff. And so to see him light up and like, this is my home.
It's planting seeds of hope.
Yeah.
It's potential really awesome. Opportunity.
And now he's like, maybe my parents could buy.
Yeah.
Like if I can, then maybe they can. Like just, it's really awesome just to see the hope in these people's eyes.
I know so many people that could benefit from this. Mm-hmm. We need like 24 more Nikki and Jeffs out there doing this.
Just slowly doing it. And that is the sad thing though, is like me and Jeff were talking, you're going to get investors mm-hmm. that are going to be like, oh, we could make money.
Right.
And that's not what we're trying to do here.
No, you're actively trying not to.
Yes. Like we are giving, I'm lowering my commission. Yep. Jeff is like not making any more than just to go to the next project mm-hmm. and roll that over. And if he does make any more than that, he's giving it back to the buyers. But investors are like, hey, how do you guys do this? Like wanting to know, because they're wanting to make the money. But you're going to have that. That doesn't mean we stop doing good or telling people about it, because somebody could take it and run with it in the wrong way.
Is there a franchise opportunity or a business model that you can create and duplicate and have people sign contracts on, you know, this is what the commission structure will be, this is the maximum potential earnings, so that we can continue with this model to make sure that this continues to be affordable for people?
So
how do we duplicate you and Jeff is what I'm saying.
So that's actually a good idea to talk to Jeff about, because he is wanting to educate other people and have them start.
Yeah.
But like what you said, I think that'd be a great idea to actually talk about how we can do that. He wants to get through 4 or 5 mm-hmm. and then just get all the kinks.
Right.
Because you have to go through the city, you have to get it resurveyed mm-hmm. and all this to turn it into from a fourplex so they can eat
individually. Each. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Condos. So
you have to have each unit subdivided
into basically. A condo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that costs money.
That all costs
money. That's all coming out of you guys' pockets.
Yeah.
It's really neat. I love what you guys are doing. It's so freaking cool to help people create the lifestyle and give them the opportunity that never would have been afforded them ever.
Right.
Outside of winning the lottery, a life-changing like opportunity like this probably wouldn't have come along without the two of you.
Yeah, it's we're just really excited awesome. To continue because we already have, I mean, people are calling.
Yeah, I'm
hey,
sure.
Hey, when's your next project?
Dude, like, the need is so far beyond the capacity for the two of you to handle on your own, you know, right. one unit at a time. That's what I'm saying. Like figuring out, so you guys figure out the system and the process and then get other people on board, mm-hmm. contractually on board.
Yeah.
So they're not trying to make tons of money with fix and flips type of thing,
right.
taking advantage of these people.
That's where our heart is mm-hmm. to help other people do the same thing.
Yeah, because you want to, when that family moves out, you want another family to be able to move in and do it all over again.
Yeah.
Not to fix the place up and take a property from $250,000 to $350,000 and the next family can't even get in there.
Right.
You know, you want to be able to continue the
But we
momentum.
Do want them to be able to have equity
sure.
to go on
yeah.
to the next one. So that's where we're not putting in any limitations or anything on that. Like, hey, we help four families
okay.
and then they get to choose, but it does have to be owner occupied, like in the HOA documents. Mm-hmm. You have to be owner occupied, no renters.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So it's a balance.
It's a learning process.
It's a learning process that we are definitely learning.
You guys are flipping over pieces to the puzzle. You
yes.
have an idea of the vision of what the picture might look like. And
got the border done.
Yeah.
Now we're trying to
or at least most of the border.
Yeah.
You know, in 6 months, a year from now, you might be like, oh, that picture is a lot different than I thought it was going to be, but we can do this and this. And, you know, yeah. you have a lot bigger vision. It's really exciting what you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm so proud to know you and Jeff and call you friends because it's really fucking awesome what you're doing to change
yeah.
people's lives.
Thank you.
They never would have had that opportunity without you.
I'm excited to change other people's lives.
We need to duplicate the two of you.
Yeah.
We need programs all over the country like this.
Yeah.
We need at least a dozen more of you in Colorado alone and
then move on.
How can, to that end, like, what are you looking for in the terms of support? Obviously the need is innumerable. There's thousands of people that need what you're doing, but in terms of support and people that can help facilitate this vision and perpetuate the growth of this program, how can people come on or be a part of that?
We're learning. So we don't know exactly mm. what all we need. You know, it was really hard to get financing.
Mm.
For it because you're buying and then you're just turning it around.
Okay.
So, and then hard money lenders were so expensive. So any kind of ideas of how to continue, because you're kind of like in the spot of like nothing, you know, you're not making and you're spending.
Right.
So ideas on that, business plan ideas, how to get it out there. Yeah. Support. And if you're interested in doing it, to call us and meet with Jeff for me.
If somebody has the time, money, and wherewithal,
yeah.
If somebody is independently wealthy and they're looking to mm-hmm. do something good in the spirit of Charles, no, who was the iron magnate? He said he wanted to spend the first half of his life making money and spend the last half of his life giving it all away. You know, if somebody were independently
that.
Wealthy and they wanted to just find a way to make a difference, you know, rather than putting that towards American Red Cross or something, they could
yeah.
be involved in this project and help 100%. With the financing aspect of it. That would definitely be huge for the two of you.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be huge.
What about somebody like me or, you know, most of our listeners who aren't independently wealthy? Is there a way that we can help support and bring awareness to what you're doing or...
I think right now, because we're at the beginning mm-hmm. stages, I think we want to get all the kinks out and then come back and say, all right, this
yeah.
is where we're needing.
Have a half a dozen test runs and a success model.
But if you're a real estate agent or you're a lender or something like that, like we would love to talk to you about how you and someone else could do that too.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts of these conversations before I close, I always like to ask, you know, what has been the most important or impactful lesson that you've learned in your life? You know, you spent a lot of time living on a homestead in Alaska. You've traveled all and lived all over the country. You're doing these amazing things. What has been for you one of the most impactful lessons that you've lived in life or learned in life? Excuse me.
Gosh, that's hard. No matter what, stay positive. Love yourself, love others, mm-hmm. and don't let hate like get in your heart. Just continue to love. I think love conquers all. And I think there's so many lessons that I've learned. And I think it all comes down to being present and enjoying the day, mm-hmm. enjoying where you are and love. And I know that's so simple, but getting caught off guard, I think that's not overthinking it. I think that's my biggest lesson from all the stuff that I've been through.
Always looking for that positive lesson. You know, like I said, in the last networking group, one of my favorite quotes was Napoleon Hill when he said, within every setback or difficulty lies a seed of equal or greater success. You know, no matter what happens in your life, no matter if it's good or bad, if you win the lottery or you lose something, always looking for that seed of equal or greater success, knowing that within every single situation, within every outcome, favorable or unfavorable, there's something in that that can have a positive aspect that will lead you further down the road, further towards your dreams than you ever thought possible. Having that mentality that everything is always good, even when it feels like crap, even when it's so unpleasant and traumatic, it's always for our positive good. And love is what happens when we stop trying to decide who deserves it.
Yes.
It's our natural state when we're still, when we're centered, when we're grounded, when we stop trying to figure out who has earned our love and affection, it just flows naturally.
Yes.
I love you. Thank you so much for being here with me. I really appreciate what you're doing for the world.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm going to put Nikki's contact information at the bottom of the screen. This is her email address. Please find her, connect with her on Facebook. Her website will be in the description. Thank you all for tuning in, and I love and appreciate each and every one of you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much for listening to today's interview. I hope there's something in there that inspired you. I hope you're feeling empowered and awed, and something spoke to your soul and resonated with your heart. If you're interested in contacting today's guest, please check the show notes, follow him on Facebook, or send him an email. As always, please subscribe, rate, and review, and share this podcast with anybody that you know that might benefit from its message. This has been BC from A World Empowered, wishing you the very best. I love you all. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.